This is a legal disclaimer for the Jordan Family Podcast. The singing you will hear at the end of this podcast, on this episode, we do not own the rights to. Nor do we really want to own the rights to this music. So you look forward to that towards the end of this episode. And without further ado, welcome back to Part B of the Crab Creek episode on the Jordan Family Podcast. All right, we're a month out from a special time of year that we like to call Christmas. I asked Jewel and Willie about Christmas time at the house with Grandma and Grandpa, and here's a few stories they had about celebrating Christmas time in the Jordan house.
Sounds good.
What was Christmas like for you guys?
It was, you know, we'd have a tree and everything, and Mom would make cookies and candy and stuff like that. And we all got a little gift. It wouldn't be very much, but we'd always get something.
Even if it was bad or not, you still
got a gift. We decided there wasn't a Santa Claus.
Did y'all have Christmas and everything out there? What'd y'all do for Christmas?
Well, a lot of Christmas, we'd go to Columbus out to Reeve, my sister Reeves, and have Christmas out there, and then they'd bring us home, you know, because most of our family, my brothers and them, lived in Columbus, and they'd all come to her house, and she had a big basement down there, and we'd all go down in that basement and have a big meal and have Christmas, and most usually, a lot of times, and then if we didn't, Jewel and them would come usually in for our. And Danny Phillips always come out on Christmas. They did, after they quit doing that, they did anyway. Danny and Phillips was there every Christmas. After you guys had your Christmas, they'd always come out there and spend the afternoon.
Again, Keith, I'm really thankful we come from a family who still practices the family get-togethers, and Christmas is the most special one that they did. And we still all try to do that, and I remember always going to Grandma and Grandpa's on Christmas Eve and visited with them for a while and watching Grandma and Grandpa open up a few presents that they had. And one of my favorite memories is Grandpa, where he couldn't see later in life, he'd take that Christmas card. Every once in a while, somebody would put a little bit of money in it. And he would turn card.
Yeah.
He'd shake that card, turn it inside out, just checking for any kind of money would fall out. And it wasn't so funny then, just watching him do it. But looking back now, I think that's one of the funniest things, to see Grandpa doing that, trying to see if there's any money in it. Then he'd always go out and burn all them Christmas papers, wrappings and stuff. We'd go out there and burn it, and he still looked through everything then just to make sure he didn't lose any money in it. So that's just a good memory to have.
Oh, yeah.
Merry Christmas!
Well, this next part, Uncle Bucky and Willie, while living at that house, they both kind of got drafted. And Uncle Bucky, he got drafted to the Army, and I know he went down to, I believe, around Fort Knox, Kentucky, and he also spent some time in Germany. And I didn't get a whole bunch of details about that, but Trenda was supposed to send me some, but Trenda, if you're listening, you're late.
Right.
But we can add that to a later episode, Trenda.
Yes.
But anyway, Uncle Willie also got drafted. But Uncle Willie also got drafted, and unfortunately for him, he got drafted into the Vietnam War. And he's a hero of mine for many reasons, but being that war veteran that he is, definitely ranks at the top of the list of why he's such a hero to me.
Without a doubt.
And he's going to tell us a little bit of story about him getting drafted, and a little bit about his time in Vietnam.
Okay.
You got drafted to go to Vietnam. What year was it?
I went to Vietnam in 67.
67.
March of 67.
Was you still in high school when you got drafted? Or?
Yeah. Got my notice about 2 weeks before I graduated.
That's a heck of a graduation announcement. Isn't
it? Yeah. That was my senior trip with the Vietnam.
Vietnam. What unit was you in? Or?
In Vietnam?
Yeah.
I said it was the 1st Infantry, 4th Armored Cav Unit, 1st Infantry Division.
Gotcha. How long did you stay there?
Almost 13 months.
13 months.
Mm-hmm.
And, what area was you in? What area was you in?
We was in the Orange Triangle area in War Zone B and C. It's in the Orange Triangle up on Cambodian border and Jung on Cambodian. What they say, it's rubber trees and elephant grass and jungles and gooks, what they told us.
Old jungle cat.
It was pretty true. That's about what was up to.
So when you got out of the Army, did you move? You still living at home?
Yeah, I come home, man. Okay. I got drafted where I got, or I got discharged in Oakland, California when I come back to the States. And
was Grandma and Grandpa happy to see you when you come home?
Oh, no, they weren't tickled. Mom wasn't a bit tickled.
I bet not. Do you remember when Uncle Willie got drafted to go to Vietnam?
Oh, yes. That was a very sad day.
Can you remember anything about that? Or?
Well, they called him. He was going to graduate, and he got his call to have to go before he graduated. And I thought the timing on that was really bad, because it was on all of our minds, you know, when he graduated, because just in a little while after he graduated, he had to leave. And I always thought, looks like they'd have let him enjoy his graduation and finish school before they drafted him. But it didn't work out that way.
What did Grandma and Grandpa, how did they react?
They was highly upset, because he was the baby of the family. And of course, did already. Harry had went, and Ralphie had went, and Big Jim went, and Bucky went. So, you know, they'd already worried about them. And I think Willie was in the worst mess of any of them.
I'd say so. Do you remember when Willie came home from Vietnam?
Oh, yes. I went to the airport and got him. That was one happy day, Danny.
I'd say so.
Keith, did you get any info on the Vietnam War of the time period that Uncle Willie was there?
Yeah. I took a class at Marshall, you know, at some point that was about the Vietnam War. But I was really disappointed because I felt like they didn't really do it justice, even though the whole class was about it. I just didn't feel like it was, like the professor didn't do that great of a job. And so much so that I don't even remember, it's the only professor that I don't think I remember the name of that I had for a class.
Yeah, it was a good but, one.
Right? So, yeah. So the 1st Infantry Division was a very well-known, very respected, very historic division. And it went to Vietnam in 1965. And for 5 years, it was known, you know, it was known as the Big Red One. And it fought the main force Viet Cong and regular North Vietnamese Army, the NVA. And it was just north of Saigon that it was fighting a lot. And I think it was along Highway 13 corridor. And, you know, they saw some really nasty fighting in that triangle, the Iron Triangle. And the Tet Offensive happened in 1968. And that was like a huge point in the war, because the North Vietnamese, it was like on lunar, the Tet was the Lunar New Year. And most generally people would celebrate and take, you know, they wouldn't work and they just took that time off. And the North Vietnamese kind of, some of them snuck into like Saigon, I think, and got into hotels, you know, and just kind of went in as civilians and they smuggled weapons in, and they just did a huge surprise attack. And that ended up, you know, the offensive, they did a surprise attack on like five main cities. And it was effective in that it was a surprise. And it kind of sent people were in bed. Like they had, you know, they had like the news people with them at times. And so images started filtering back to the United States showing, you know, how horrible war was. And that led to an increase in the amount of protest and stuff like that in the United States, and, you know, people not wanting the war. And I think the North Vietnamese, during the Tet Offensive, they lost like close to 60,000 people. And I think the South Vietnamese and the Americans lost like around 14. But because of the images getting home, it ended up being like a huge turning point, because that led to people pushing for the war to be over and stuff like that. And you know, the one thing with the Tet Offensive, the one city was Hue, and it was I think it was like a 3-month battle where it was a lot of hand to hand and building to building type combat, which was, you know, really brutal. And but the big red one was definitely a very historic division that has all kind of accolades through its history. So that was, you know, some really interesting things if people want to really dive into it and really look. There's a lot of interesting things to be found.
Yeah, so pretty proud of old Uncle Willie for being in that infantry unit. And remember on this little sign on his building out there, had that big red one. I always remember seeing that up there. So, thankful. We had, I knew Uncle Harry was kind of in the World War II.
Right.
And Uncle Ralphie was Korea. And then Uncle Willie got home safely from Vietnam. So for as many kids as they had in actual combat and actually in the Army and Marines, that they all got back home. So that's pretty thankful for that.
Right.
Said prayers.
And in a later episode, we will have we'll delve into some other family members that has some pretty good military histories as well. So we'll delve into that later on.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, we'll keep moving along. This story here is around that same time period. It's a story that involves my mom Phyllis and Grandma Carrie. This one almost changed history, involving especially me. And I just learned this. And Uncle Willie's going to tell a little bit about this story, too.
Okay.
Your mom will come take my mom to the laundromat, the door of honor. Phyllis did take it. A lot of times she'd take it home with her and do it herself. But she did. She'd take mom up to the laundromat and help her do it. And when the bridge fell, you know, they come across that about 3 o'clock at the...
No, I didn't know.
They go over to Tiny's, that's Tiny's supermarket, and get groceries every Friday. About Phyllis is coming up, mom, they go over to the park and get groceries. She'd take mom with her. Mm-hmm. They come across that bridge that day.
I did not know that.
I think Phyllis told me around 3 o'clock.
Oh, it's about 2 hours before it fell. Wow. Just a couple hours before it fell.
Yeah.
That's definitely a scary story that was really tragic, but it could have been even more tragic, especially to me and to our family. And very fortunate that, you know, it didn't happen at the time that they was coming across. And like I said, I didn't realize that. And that was the first I'd heard that story that I can remember, is when Uncle Willie was talking about it. Yeah, just two hours difference, wasn't it? So, when, what year, what time of year and stuff did this happen, Keith?
It was December 15th, 1967. Now, I've seen different reports. I've seen reports say 5 o'clock. I've seen reports say 4:58. My guess is it probably did happen at 4:58. And by the time people were getting notified, it was probably 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as like, you know, they probably, calls were probably coming in to the police at probably 5 because it wasn't like anybody had a cell phone and could call immediately.
Yeah.
So it probably took a couple minutes. So probably that's where the 5 o'clock is. I'm guessing the 5 o'clock was probably the first phone calls that were made to emergency responders. And the 5, you know, the 4:58 is probably the actual time that fell. And it was like, in less than 20 seconds, they said it folded like a deck of cards. It was 1,460 feet. And just like that, the Silver Bridge was collapsed into the river. And it was 32 vehicles went into the river and 46 victims, including 2 bodies that were never found.
Go ahead.
Basically the collapse led it to the 1968 act. I can't remember what it was called, but basically it was in 1968 an act was passed to help with the funding of bridges and like the inspections and to make sure that this kind of stuff was not to happen again.
Yeah, I think that's still in effect. That's that passage of that bill, I think it's still in effect today, I believe.
Right.
It changed the whole way that bridges are supposed to be inspected and the time, you know, right, in between because, inspections.
Because when that was built, you know, I can remember right, it was some type of, you know, the I-bar, there was like a corrosion that had happened. And at the time that it was built, I don't think people realized that that was even a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they were completely not prepared for it, and there you go.
Yeah, definitely people that live in our area definitely got affected by this, and, you know, and I'm pretty thankful it happened before I was born, so I wouldn't be here doing this podcast right now if it had been 2 hours earlier than that. So, because they crossed at 3 p.m., that's pretty daggone close to being there.
Just think about it. Just 10 days before Christmas, so it was probably fairly busy, and just be thankful, you know, it probably couldn't have come at a worse time, because right at 5 o'clock, you know, people getting off work and everything too.
Oh, yeah.
And it said that I think there was an average of 3,500 to 4,000 vehicles crossing the bridge on a daily average. So that's a lot of traffic.
Yeah, it was.
And,
so, yeah, and God, I mean, God definitely watched over mom and grandma on that one.
Right. It could have, I mean, you know, it with that kind of traffic and it being at 5 or just a couple minutes before 5, you know, it could have been worse, because, you know, had it been at like 5:15, how many more vehicles mm-hmm. would have been there?
That's true. So it was a pretty tragic event for our area, for sure. Pretty much nationwide, really.
Well, at the time, it was the most casualties in a bridge collapse in U.S. history at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was, until just recently, I think it had remained as such. Yeah, so I guess, you know, when this happened, there's all kinds of people trying to get in touch with loved ones to see if they're okay. And I guess, you know, people were trying to get a hold of grandma and grandpa and couldn't get through, and kept calling. And back then you had an operator that, you know, would connect you to calls. And I think Uncle Johnny took it upon himself to impersonate a state police, and he dialed the operator and said he was so-and-so with the state police and he is trying to get hold of, and gave the name and the phone number, and sure enough, he got a hold of him right off the bat. So there's more than one way to find out about people you care about.
Exactly right. Take it, Uncle Johnny impersonating a state trooper. So.
That's right.
So, he said, we'll move on from the tragic stories and get back to them living at the house here. Grandpa always had that beautiful garden. And I know in our first episode, we had kind of mentioned something about it. And Keith had your strawberry story. So Willie had his own one that he remembered. So we'll let Uncle Willie tell us about his gardening stories with Grandpa.
Okay, this should be good.
What can you remember about the strawberry patch?
And Dad picked 21 gallon one afternoon down there. Mom said, that's enough. Don't bring no more to the house.
Yeah, because probably the pick, once the picking stopped, when it worked out, she had to do all the work. Yeah. Yeah, Keith said he liked that strawberry patch.
It was a dandy.
And along with strawberries, he also raised tomatoes. And Trenda has a pretty good story about the tomatoes and Uncle Bucky.
Bucky was a prankster. And so he also, one time, Grandpa had had a garden. And he had planted some tomato plants. They were probably 6-8 inches tall. And he always sat on that porch. From the direction he was sitting, he could see the garden. He couldn't see real good, but he could see, you know, make out a little bit of the garden. So anyways, Dad had been down there and he seen those tomato plants and Papa was bragging about them. So Dad went and bought these other tomato plants and they were probably a foot and a half tall. And he stuck down there and he replaced them, replaced the small ones with these big ones. And the next day he went down there and Papa was sitting in the swing and he could see him. He kept squinting kind of and looking out there at the garden. Finally, he had to get up and go walk out there and look at it. He never said a word, never mentioned the fact that they grew a foot overnight. And of course, Dad knew the truth, but and Dad just got a lot of pleasure out of that.
Well, how we're laughing about Uncle Bucky, we're just going to keep this segment all on him and some of his pranks. And we'll let Trenda tell us about a few more here.
So, you wanted some stories about the Crab Creek stories, and so Bucky was my dad, and he was a prankster. He loved to pull pranks on people and do funny things. And I remember him telling me a story one time. Him and Grandpa Jordan were hunting out in the cabin somewhere, and was walking. They were squirrel hunting, and Grandpa, he seen him sitting underneath a persimmons tree, and so he had an apple in his pocket, and so Grandpa didn't see him or hear him or anything, so he snuck as close as he could without being seen or heard, and he throws this apple and it lands right beside of Papa. And he said that he was watching and said Papa looked at the apple, picked it up, looked up in the tree, looked at the apple again, and then shined it up on his shoulder and started eating it just like nothing had ever happened. And said he waited about 15-20 minutes, and then he went up there to Pawpaw see if he had shot any squirrels, and he never mentioned anything about the apple, and Dad didn't either, and he just secretly enjoyed that. And I just thought that was always so funny.
Well, Keith, as always, Uncle Bucky was good for a few laughs, and I'm glad we got to add that on here, because I said I've been laughing pretty much, listened to everything on this thing. I've been laughing right along with him, so.
Right. And yeah, he's definitely good for laughs.
I know you got a few more stories to add later on, possibly too, but we'll keep on trucking.
It might change the rating of the podcast.
That's what I'll say. We'll save it for a week.
rated M for mature.
Yeah, so. But for old Uncle Buck, he was, like I said, he was a cat bird. Uncle Willie was the last one to move out of the house on Crab Creek, and we'll let him tell a little bit about when he moved out.
Okay.
The house in Crab Creek, was you the last one to move?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I did move to
Crab. I didn't know if Bucky left before you or...
Oh, yeah, Bucky, he left. Bucky come home from the service. He's in the military and army. And he come home in 63 or 4. He went to Columbus and got a job, went to work, and he met Joyce and met her, and they stayed out there then, or he lived out there for a long time, and then he moved back down here.
What year did you move at?
I can't remember. Probably in the 70s, I'd say.
So you lived there all the way up to the
70s? Yeah. I was married then. And
so is that when you moved out, when you all got married? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That pretty much tells you how long you stayed
there,
in.
We stayed there with them for...
Oh, see, I didn't know that. So y'all lived there after you got married?
After we got married, we stayed there about a year or two. They got our house finished in there.
Oh, the one in Galveston Ferry?
In Galveston Ferry.
See, I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. And it was probably all winter. We stayed there about all winter.
Okay.
So Willie and Ellen was married October 11th, 1970. So roughly them living with Grandma and Grandpa for around 2 years would make it around 1972. And that would be a total of 50 years. So Keith, Grandma and Grandpa from the year 1922 to then had never lived in a house by themselves. That's a very long time. And I bet you could hear a big sigh of relief echoing down Crab Creek as Uncle Willie was pulling out the driveway. I couldn't imagine being that long. Yeah, that's...
That long.
That's a lot of years.
That's crazy. Oh, well, you said a big sigh, but you may have also heard some shouting and dancing.
That's probably true, too.
Just joking.
Keith, I had a few of our other cousins and... my sister, and I think Jessica's got a few stories, and Trenda may have another story or two. So they all record their own little memory about life on Crab Creek. So at this time, I'm going to let them play a couple of their stories right now.
Look forward to hearing it.
I remember one day, me and Mom would always go out to Grandma's. And Grandpa had some pigs, and he wanted to go. He slopped the hogs every day. Anyway, it was down. We walked up the road past his garden. It was probably 150 yards, maybe, from the house. So we walked up the road, and it was an old log structure. It was a handmade log structure, and the hogs were in there. He had a trough, and he got some corn. It was crushed corn, anyway. He made a slop out of it, he called it. Made a big bucket full, and there's like 3 or 4 hogs there it was eating. He poured it into a trough. When he dumped it in, he leaned over just a little too far, and he fell in head first. And he'd come up out of there dripping with slop all over him. And I was laughing so hard to get back to the house. Mom, they couldn't even get the story out because I was laughing so hard. And I was probably like 5 at the time.
Keeping on the subject of pigs, Susan fortunately got Uncle Jim to talk some about the butchering and hanging pigs upstairs in the old house. That may have been a scare tactic to keep her and the rest of us grandkids from running up and down those stairs all the time. But needless to say, here's the story.
Down here at Grandma and Grandpa's old house. At Grandma and Grandpa's old house down here. What is the story about? I was always scared to stay upstairs in one of the bedrooms because I always heard they butchered hogs up there. What's the story behind that? Yeah. I always heard that they butchered hogs up there. I don't know if everybody was teasing me or what when we were kids. Always heard that they butchered hogs up in one of the bedrooms. No, butchered hogs, pigs.
Oh, butchered hogs.
Up in them one of the bedrooms down there at the old house. Did they?
Probably did.
Boy, it scared me when I was a kid when I'd go down there and stay.
I'd probably stuck it together. was cold by the time we killed them.
Oh, you scared me to death. Go up there and stay one of them.
Skin the mountains. Kind of, we hung them up there.
Wow, they did.
Put that stuff on them. On them. That's what done. It cured the meat.
So that was true?
Yeah, dying it. We wanted to, Mom wanted to cook ham or something. She sits there right down that ham.
Yeah.
So that is true. See, I always knew I was scared to death.
Cut them, hope one cry or whatever.
Wow.
I was always scared.
Tried to make that last us till spring.
So it is true. I knew I was always scared to go up there.
That's what we done until one time the rabbits and things that we hunted and then we didn't have no meat after we got rid of that.
I remember the chestnut trees sitting out in the front yard. And I remember Dad telling me that Grandpa, where he worked for this National State Forest, and they had been planting several of the chestnut trees, and that's how the chestnut trees ended up out to the cabin or out to the old home place on the hill. And that's how the chestnut trees, there was a chestnut tree at their house. He planted it there. And so I think how old that tree must be, because as you'll probably learn, Grandpa would have been 123 years this past month. And so Dad remembers the trees being planted, and my dad's in his 70s, so I'm sure the tree's probably maybe 80 years old, 70 years old, 60. I don't know, but I just think how neat it is and how deep and rich my family history is. And growing up with 26 other cousins that I was always close to, even with an age difference, they were some of my best friends growing up, and I think Grandma and Grandpa instilled that in us. I remember Grandma and Grandpa being famous on Crab Creek for always being on the front porch, and even after Grandpa's eyes failed him, he would always wave because he could always hear the vehicle or always hear the horn honk, and he always waved at every vehicle that came back and forth on Crab Creek. And they always sat in a swing on their front porch. And that was one of their favorite things to do when the weather was pretty and they were able. They would sit out on the front porch every day, especially in the evening hours. Secretly, I think they used to like to sit out there and listen for my dad when he would go home, because he would always honk. And I think they always wanted to be out there when he would go by every evening after work. But that's just my thoughts. But those are some of my fondest and favorite memories of my grandparents. And remembering life as simple as and as rich as it was, and how much I miss them every day.
So as kids, we used to have to go down to Grandma and Grandpa's, and we would help them do different things, carrying coal, dust the floor, or dust the knickknacks, clean the floor in the spring because of the coal dust. And I remember me and Jessica and Nancy, we got down on our hands and knees and like scrubbed her kitchen floor because of the coal dust would get down in those cracks. And we would have to wait until after cold weather in order to do this, because there wasn't no sense in doing it until that was done because of the coal dust. And I remember when we was done, Papa would give us a penny, sometimes two pennies, but it was always a penny. And I always thought that was so funny because, you know, you couldn't really buy anything with a penny at that point. And But to him, that was still, you know, and we never said a word. You know, we just took our penny and thanked him for it. But always thought that was so cool that he gave us a penny.
And I think I remember going to their house and how neat it was to, they had absolutely no indoor plumbing, none. And so they had a little red well pump, hand pump, that set out in the side yard. And I remember that was my favorite thing to do, no matter the time of the year it is, to go out there and pump water and get fresh, cold water coming straight out of the well. And it was always the best tasting water. And I can still taste it today. It was just fresh and crisp, and it was just so neat to me. And they had their own little washroom, and they would pump water every day in their water in their bucket pans, and they would heat up whatever water they needed for bathing or cooking. There was, they never had, they always had an outdoor, like an outhouse, that was their toilet.
What I remember the most about the grandma and grandpa's house down there in Crab Creek was the simplicity of it. There was no running water. They did have electric, old coal stove. And our house had burnt once, and we had to live upstairs there for a few months because it was January and it was very cold. And it was just normal to us that you either went outside in the middle of the night to use the restroom or you had a pee pot. So to us, it was just no big deal. It was just the way things were. And in the washroom, you had two big metal bowls, and you would heat water up and pour them in the one, and that was your washing one, and then you had a rinsing one. And that's just how you washed off. And playing out in the yard and stuff, we had the pump well out there. They had a pump well and a metal cup. And I remember that metal cup, we all shared it and never thought twice about it. We'd pump us some nice cold water, best water ever. We'd share that cup. And it was just the simplicity. They lived such a simple, happy life. And that's what I miss the most.
There was a coal stove that sat in the middle of the living room. And I remember it always keeping us warm. And, you know, they always had a little bucket of coal sitting beside the stove. Grandpa always had a peppermint stick in his pocket. And everybody loved Papa's peppermint sticks. And they, you know, they always loved it when everybody would stop in and visit and spend time with them.
Well, everybody was telling their stories. I had a couple come to mind that I'd like to tell too. Mainly, I think I've mentioned this before, but I played a lot of music there at Grandma and Grandpa's house. And I always remember Grandpa's harmonica. He would always get out and play a song or two with me. And he has always enjoyed the music. But mostly I remember Grandma singing. Grandma had one of the prettiest voices. And she could sing pretty much any old hymnal, any gospel song that you could think of. And she knew all the verses. And verses that we don't even, you know, never sang before or knew existed. Grandma could remember them. And she pretty much did right up to her last days here on earth that she could still sing and had the prettiest voice, and I will always treasure having that part of my life, you know, listening to my grandma sing, and I'll never forget it. And Grandpa and I got to hunt a lot together, and probably unfortunately for him, when me, him, and Dad would go out, Grandpa would always get stuck with me beside of him a lot of times. And of course, I asked him for probably 10 pounds of candy, and always had a ton of questions to ask him probably all the time. And no wonder poor old Grandpa didn't kill a deer till later in life, because probably I hunted with him too much. But I remember him telling a story at Bogus Holler. It was some cornfields, I suppose, back then. And Grandpa seen this buck running down through there on the edge of it. And all he could see was horns. And so Grandpa took a shot and knocked the deer down. But the deer got away from him, and I think they tracked it, and some other people probably know the story better than I'm telling it, but they never did find that deer. And I heard later on there's somebody coon hunting up that area, and they happened to find that deer and what they supposedly thought was that deer, and it ended up being like an 18-pointer, this huge old buck. And unfortunately for Grandpa, he never did get to claim that. And this other story, we was sitting along Bogus Holler Road, and along the edge, there was one of the corn stalk signs that Grandpa had installed several years before that. And he said he heard some shooting back on top of the ridge behind him. Here come this little spike buck and ran all the way down to the edge. He said, stood right behind that tree with the sign. And Grandpa said it had the pitiful look on its face and scared to death. And Grandpa took pity on that deer. And even though he had never killed a deer, he ended up letting that deer walk. And so that showed what kind of heart he had. And fortunately, I believe the year was 1985, him and Dad and me was hunting there on my Uncle Ronnie Bonecutter's place, and it was on the edge between him and Uncle Harold and Judy's place, and there's that little field there on top of that hill, and I remember walking down the trail and making a little circle around, and I seen some deer run up their way, but I couldn't tell what they was, and a few minutes later, I heard a shot up there, and so the time I got back atop the hill, there laid a deer, and Grandpa has successfully killed his first buck. It was an 8-pointer. And I remember Dad telling me that he let Grandpa kind of hold the gun, and he got behind him and aimed that gun up through that. I think they was hunting out of the truck then, and kind of aimed that gun for him and let Grandpa pull the trigger, and down the deer went. So that was a very exciting day of hunting, and so proud that my dad was involved in that, and I got to kind of at least hear the gunshot of Grandpa's first deer. Keith, I loved hearing everyone's memories, and it's really neat to hear how everyone was kind of similar. And I had to do some editing so they wouldn't be repeated so many times, but everybody pretty much had the same precious memories. And Keith, what do you think was the number one memory everyone had there?
Well, there's so many to choose from, but I know that several people's talked about the well water and how awesome it was, how cold it was.
Yeah.
It was wonderful water.
Yeah, I think that was probably, that'd been my pick for the number one answer would be everybody loved going out there and getting well water and drinking it.
I can remember Dr. Choi. We took Grandpa right after he had that hernia surgery.
Mm-hmm.
We took, him up to Dr. Choi, and he had asked Dr. Choi right when he did the surgery how long it would be before he could carry a bucket of water. And I remember us going up there, taking him for his first return visit checkup, and him asking Dr. Choi how long if he could carry water yet. And Dr. Choi, I can remember him saying, why is it Mr. Jordan's always asking why he can carry water?
Little did he know.
Right.
So that was pretty neat with them living there, the old water well there. Well, Keith, we're going to wrap this episode up from Crab Creek. And as Grandpa and Grandma are aging into their middle 80s, there are more changes coming for them. So we'll continue that into our next episode.
That sounds wonderful. The only thing I can say to that is, precious memories, how they linger, how they ever flood my soul in the stillness of the midnight. Precious sacred scenes unfold. Precious Father.
Oh, good Lord. He knows all the words.
Fly across the